Good morning. Let me call the council study session of February 21st, 2008 to order. I would like to excuse council member Rowles from the meeting. And we have several items to go over. I have nine listed on my agenda. The first is to hear a presentation, discuss and provide direction for the fiscal year 07-08 and 08-09 budget issues for building safety and planning.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm Christine Zalanka with Development Services Department. I have John Wesley with Planning and Terry Williams with Building Safety Department. What we wanted to do today was share with you some information on our current budgeting situation, both for fiscal year 07-08 for the remainder of this year and our projections for next year's fiscal budget 08-09. Just to review, the Building Safety Division and a portion of planning is funded through a Building Safety Permit Restricted Fund. There is no general plan funding for this service. Basically, our challenge is to balance our level of service against the revenues and the fluctuating revenues that we realize based on the changes in development in the construction industry. Our current fiscal year 07-08 budget was balanced based on no growth projections. Last year at this time, when we were finalizing 07-08, looking at the economic conditions at the time and working with our budget and finance office, we determined that we would not project any growth at all, but we balanced on a no growth projection. Additionally, based on the economic situation, we actually balanced our 07-08 budget knowing that we would draw down the fund balance, anticipating that the economy was going to stay at least flat and that we would have to draw into that fund balance to fund operations through the remainder of the year. At the time and currently, we have 95 positions in building safety, 12 in planning, and 3 from information technology division that are funded by the building safety permit fund. Because of the current economic situation and the forecast that we're looking at for the next 18 to 24 months, we have come to the realization that we are going to be even deeper in debt. We are not going to be able to manage our current budget at a straight line level. We're actually looking at a 6% reduction in revenues that are being projected through the end of this year and through the end of 08-09. So what we want to do today is explain to you a little bit of the detail on where we're at on the restricted fund and our plan of action for dealing with that. We're currently in the process of evaluating all of our services, all of our processes, identifying ways that we can streamline those and become more efficient. We've also met with the Developers Advisory Forum representatives last week. We explained the situation to them. As for their input, quite frankly, we're asking them to help us identify what their priorities are and what their service requirements are. We will continue to work with those representatives and actually have four focus groups established that we'll be coordinating with the developers. And with that brief introduction, I'd like to turn it over to Terry to talk more specifically about the building safety impact.
Morning, Council. The first slide is a chart of the new construction permit activities. I've displayed these in six-month increments. It may be a little easier to follow, instead of all the numbers, this chart. The very bottom graph shows you single-family permit activities for the last 2.5 years. The middle graph is the commercial new construction permits, and then the top is the total permits. And as you can see, single family has been fairly flat. Commercial is trending down, and total permits are falling down more dramatically. I also want to show you some of the other activity levels. Here is a graph of our commercial plan review activities. And as you can see, this displays the last 2 years. That graph continues to trend upward. That is, we're seeing more volume of plan reviews than we have in our past. Similarly, with inspections, inspections were fairly flat through the end of 06, jumped up in 07, beginning of this fiscal year, are at near record levels, and then the last 3 months have dropped back down to more normal levels. Is that a trend? Yeah, we're not sure, but we think this question is going to go down.
Can you go back to page 4 real quickly? And maybe I shouldn't even ask this question.
Yes, sir.
What's the total permit line represent?
It's not a sum of commercial and single family. There also would represent multifamily permits and mobile home permits.
Okay.
Just permits themselves, not hours or dollars.
This is just permits.
All right. Okay, thanks.
What that activity, however, is not translating in is in terms of revenue. We're showing you here, if you look at the middle column, for budget of 07-08, we expected revenues to be a little better than $10 million. The new projection, the adjusted projection for those three categories of permit fees is now down at $9.2 million, dramatic drop-off. More than that, we're also projected in discussions with the Budget and Finance Office that it will continue to slide down with an expectation of a little better than 8.6 for budget year 08-09. This drop-off, you can recognize if you look at our first 6 months of actuals for 07-08, where we had anticipated a budget shortfall of $657,000. We actually experienced more than $500,000 of fall off in the first 6 months of the year. With the continued slide in revenues that is projected, we could end up this 07-08 with no intervention, $1.2 million in the negative. These numbers, if you go to the bottom of this graph, the restricted fund balance, we had slightly less than $1 million of fund balance at the beginning of 07-08. With the fall off of 1.2 without an intervention, we would end up a negative $250,000 at the end of 07-08. It gets dramatically worse at the end of 08-09 as proposed and using budget projections for revenues. We would end up at a total combined negative of over $2.5 million.
How was the restricted fund balance? How did it build up? Is it build up over a number of years? How do we work?
Yes, Mayor. It began in the middle of 2003 with the concept that the council put forward in response to the development community, who asked that the revenues paid for permits go towards funding the services, not other services of the city. And with that, we began this restricted fund. We track those funds monthly in our expenses and the revenues for that, and that has built up over time. Again, we had almost $1 million at the beginning of 07-08.
Okay. Scott?
For this past year, the assumption was no growth. What's the assumption for 08-09 that leads to the $2.5 million deficit?
The assumption for 08-09 is at least a 6% fall off.
So we're predicting.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
This chart is showing you what we anticipate the impact will be following the reduction in workforce. There would be a realization of $145,000 of savings in 07-08, still leaving us with a potential negative balance, worst case scenario, of almost $100,000 at the end of the year. This, again, is worst case because it does not factor in, it takes all of the severance package potential for severance pay and vacation reimbursement for people that are being laid off. It takes the worst case scenario of that. Some of those people we hope and believe will be placed elsewhere within the city, so that number may not be as bad as it shows up on this slide. Factoring that in, then the proposed shortfall for 08-09 without the RIF would be 2.380. With the reduction in workforce, that would have an impact of just under $2.8 million of savings. We would end up with a small cushion of about $400,000 by the end of 08-09 as a result of this reduction in workforce. Here's how those dollars translate into positions.
One more question on that. Do you get the 96 million, or 1,000 back to get to the 410?
That's right. The 410 is the net amount after the 96 is deducted out.
All right.
That's correct, ma'am. The impact then in terms of positions being reduced from the original in building safety of 95, we are cutting 32 positions, leaving a balance of 63. Planning, there are 12 positions funded through permit revenues. The cut there is for 3 positions, leaving 9. Information technology, there are 2 of those positions fully funded through permit revenues. We're not proposing any cuts in the IT support staff. The total of the 35 cuts factors to just under a third of the original staffing. Some detail of that, how that those numbers came to be on the building safety side. We are looking at just about a third cut throughout each of the primary functional areas, and slightly higher than a third in our other technical staff administration area. This is top to bottom cuts, including management and supervisory personnel, as well as frontline staff.
Vice Mayor.
Terry, are any of those positions currently vacant?
None of these are vacant positions. There were, at the beginning of 07-08, 10 vacant positions, 9 in building safety, 1 in planning. Those were already taken out first.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor and Council, just very briefly from planning, this page shows the 3 positions that we'll be reducing from what's funded from the building safety fees. One plan reviewer, our screener, one inspector will still provide the screening function through the staff that remains.
I just wanted to jump in real quickly and give you an update on where we are in the reduction in workforce process. We've been working closely with human resources. I met, and Terry and John and I met last week with all of the employees that are going to be directly impacted where their positions have been eliminated. We are currently going through a process that HR is taking the lead on. They've got a vacancy review committee made up of HR representatives and representatives from our department looking at the positions that are, the people that are being, their positions are being eliminated, and other vacancies throughout the rest of the city. Although there, as I understand it, there are not an awful lot of those at this point in time. They're looking to match up people to see, first off, if we can place any of the people that are on the line relative to their positions. We're hoping that we'll know the outcome of that by mid next week, although I don't have a firm date on that. Once we know the final people that will be separated from the city, they'll receive a letter. They'll have 45 days in which to determine whether or not they're going to accept the severance package. HR has been working very closely with us. They'll be working individually with each of those people. We're planning to have a resource center available to them. The standard training as far as interview skills, resume building. Terry has already sent out a note to his peers throughout the state, quite frankly, to see if their other cities are hiring. We actually have a few positions that we've been notified of. We've got a site on our intranet where employees can go there, and we're trying to keep that information as up to date as we possibly can as soon as we hear if anybody else is hiring. Unfortunately, right now, based on the information we've had from the city of Phoenix, the county, and the state over the last couple of weeks, things are looking pretty grim across the region. The layoff date, the final separation date, will be somewhere around the end of April. It just kind of depends on how the system works out, whether or not we can place people and how all of the associated processes work. But we're looking towards the end of April, so we'll get just approximately 2 months worth of savings this year, and then those positions will remain empty and unfunded next year.
Okay. Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. I was at an event last night, and somebody was talking about the process at the legislature, and they said, you know, they just go and they tell the departments you have to cut this much, and then the department people are left with the job of going in and telling people your jobs are gone, these programs are gone, this is all gone. You know, I don't want anybody to think that this isn't a hard thing to do. I think that we're doing what we need to do. we have to have integrity in the budget, and we have to take care of things. But I appreciate the things that you're doing to try and take care of people, because, you know, we talk about positions, but these are people. These are people's lives, and this is devastating to people. I mean, in spite of the fact that we recognize what's driving it, I know that emotionally that people then think, why was I the one that was chosen to have my position eliminated? Why wasn't it this other person? And they can end up, you know, feeling devastated, not just for one moment, but it can be devastating for their lives. And so all of these things, I think, are helpful. But I think that the other message from us should be, this is not about your performance. This isn't about you as a person. This is about an economic downturn that we're all in right now, and the fact that, you know, all of these other folks are dealing with it. But I don't want this to be a cold-blooded message where we're talking about positions, because these are people. And then, you know, you're talking here about, I think you're about to talk about the other side of it, which is, now how does this impact our ability to serve our customers, which is the other thing that we're trying to do better all the time at serving our customers. So I know you're going to get to that in a minute, but I don't want to go to that before we talk about the lives of the people and their families. And my family has lived through this, and I know that it's also very hard on children and spouses and everyone else. And so I don't want us to come across as cold-blooded here.
If I could just address that, you're absolutely right, and I think we have done the best we possibly can figure out how to do to make sure that we do have that personal interaction. I've met personally with the vast majority of employees, basically gave them exactly that message, that this was not about their performance. We have some absolutely wonderful people that unfortunately are part of this process. HR has been wonderful working with us. They will be very involved on a personal level with each of the individuals that are being affected to, number one, try to place them, and if we can't, to then work with them and help them to transition, hopefully, into some other position. So you're absolutely right, and we'll continue to try to keep that human face on this.
Okay. Mayor, Vice Mayor, thank you for your comments. They're appreciated, and it's a perfect lead into where I'm going next. Here's our plan of action. We know that there will be potentially some ramifications because of this reduction in workforce. Eliminating a third of our positions obviously will have some impact. Right now, however, that impact is uncertain. It depends most largely upon the continued workload. The expectation is the workload's going to drop. If that's the case, there may be no impact to turnaround times, which is the basic benchmarking that we're governed by and the basic way that we're graded by our customers. We are evaluating our workload circumstances weekly. We're also looking at other ways that we can streamline the turnaround time processes. And we are, as Christine mentioned, we are working with the Development Advisory Forum, creating focus groups to help the industry tell us what services are most paramount in their eyes. How will we deal with workload fluctuations? Again, we're monitoring plan review activities, permitting, and inspection activities weekly. And we continue to track monthly our revenues and our expenditures. We have available the ability to contract some plan review services if we need that to the outside. And we're also potentially, we could experience an increase in turnaround times or inspection rollovers. But again, we don't know those issues yet. Part of the plan of action, however, does include closing the building safety services that are provided at the East Mesa Service Center. We are closing that effective Friday the 29th, a week from tomorrow. That will save 4 full-time positions. It will inconvenience both our winter visitors, who use that extensively, and some of our Mesa residential contractors. But the industry recognizes that this is a necessity and are accepting of that. Project coordination services will be affected. They will be reduced, but they will continue. The message we want to say loud and clear is we're not giving up these services. This service is a hallmark of the land development process in Mesa, and we're not stepping back and eliminating that completely. It will have to be more focused, though, in terms of the capacity for the projects that can experience that service. We're also looking at reevaluating our development planning processes, how we handle city share and buy-ins, and so on, looking at working with other departments to see what assistance they can provide. And then lastly, we're also reinventing our PPRT, our preliminary plan review team and processes, and our pre-submittal services processes. Wanted to mention just momentarily about fees. A fee increase is not a part of this plan of action. It's not necessary or related to this. However, you will be seeing in March, we will be coming before the council and the audit and finance subcommittee with the increases that are part of our normal annual budget review process. As you recall, there are elements of our fees which are tied to indexing, so that those construction valuations go up twice a year, and therefore the need to raise permit fees for new construction is already taken care of. But there are elements in our fees, such as minimum fee permits and engineering fee permits, which are not linked to that element, so those will be part of our normal process of budget. There's not a separate fee increase being considered as part of this shortfall in revenue. We are looking at and evaluating whether or not we should add a technology improvement fee. Did you want to speak to that?
Oh, okay. We're looking at that right now. Our major software package is Tidemark. That's the electronic permitting system. That's currently aging, as most computer systems do. There's a typical 3 to 5 year cycle on that. We're evaluating whether or not Tidemark should be updated or it should be a new product. What we're proposing, and Budget and Finance has agreed that we could actually establish a sub-restricted fund within building safety that would be totally dedicated to technology upgrade and replacement. At this point in time, we do not yet have a proposal as to what the amount of that fee might be. We're still working on that, but if we can come to an agreement on what's appropriate, that'll be brought back in March also for your consideration.
With that, Mayor, Council, we're going to transition to looking at the planning side of the activity levels, seeing what's going on in building safety and working on the budget currently. We thought it would be a good idea to go back and see how we're doing in comparison, how that might affect our budget for the coming year. So we started by looking at our Planning and Zoning Board first submittals. That gives us a good indication of what all is coming through the process, because most things start here and then end up as subdivisions and design review cases and so forth. So with this chart, just kind of quickly summarizing it, you can see that for this current fiscal year, this shows that our activity level in terms of first submittals is pretty consistent with where it has been, still a little bit on the high side. Last year in 2006-07 was a very strong year for us. We had a lot of cases come through. This year looks again to be a little below that, but probably consistent with previous years. The next page, another thing we looked at was the total amount of activity that's going before the boards that we have responsibility for: Planning and Zoning Board, Design Review Board, Board of Adjustment, and Zoning Administrator. And look back over the last couple of years to see how the current caseload that hits those boards is comparing to previous years. And through the first 6 months of this year, we've had a caseload that's comparable to the full year in the last several years, and we're projecting about 540 cases total, or board items go before the boards through this fiscal year. The next page then takes that information and just shows it graphically, so you can see the current year in relationship to previous years. The line on top with X's is the current year.
John, this is, it's actually rather startling that, you know, when we're looking at 02-03, which is what we all experienced post 9/11, that real drop off, and you compare it to now, we're looking strong now. Does anybody want to try and explain that?
The punchline's coming. Just
okay.
Hold on.
Okay.
I already have it. You want it?
No. I don't want to read the end of the book. Let me keep going.
Okay. Just make sure that this is clear on this board actions chart. This is everything that appears on an agenda that goes before the boards. And so some things aren't cases. We're taking through zoning ordinance changes. Those will be part of this. We'll have things that get continued a couple of meetings. So every time it appears on an agenda, we've done something to get it there, so it shows up on this list. But that happens every year too, but there has been, you know, that includes all of these things. But as we've looked at that, we've also looked at what's been the size of the projects that we're processing compared to previous years. And that's what this next slide shows. And you can see there's been a range. Mostly it's in around the upper 20 acres per on average per case. We had a low in 03, 04. We had a spike in 06, 07. Part of that was we had one big case out. We did a rezoning for Phoenix Mesa Airport. That was one 3,000-acre case. In fact, you take that out, and it drops it from the 60 to the 36, but still high. We had over five cases of 250 acres or more in 06, 07. So far this year, we've had no cases over 250 acres. Again, that average has dropped to 19. And with the P&Z fees that are per-acre-based, that can affect our overall revenues.
Scott?
John, it seems that the cases are smaller, but are the personnel hours that are being utilized for these cases also reduced? Because I don't see that sliding.
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, that's a figure that we can't quite track as easily, and so we don't have it in here. But a lot of the cases that we're seeing are cases, even though they may be smaller, they can still be pretty complicated. We're talking about a Lowe's case, a Parcel 51 case, those types of things, that Hurricane Bay, that may be small cases, not generate a lot of revenue, but can still eat up a lot of staff time.
But we have no way of tracking that, because that is an important number.
Right. Not quite as clearly or directly as these. We have, and one of the factors we looked at, didn't include in here, is looked at so far this fiscal year for the first 6 months. We looked at the revenues by function area and what the staff time has been charged against it to get a percentage cost recovery in those different areas. And it ranges from the Board of Adjustment area of about 30% to the Planning and Zoning area of about 60%. It's not in here. It's not one we included in this.
Yeah.
But additional information we can provide the Council in the future. And we will have as part of our fee increase that we're going to talk about later.
If I could just add one thing there. We do track staff time associated, with projects. We're, I think, continuing to improve in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that we have no information, but it's probably not as black and white as we'd like it to be as far as the amount of staff time for each individual case. So we do it more on a broader basis.
Okay. Didn't I see a slide in here that talked about the number of days of it takes to get a project through, average number of days?
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, no, we don't have that in here. We have been working hard on that over the last couple of years, and we have reduced it significantly over a couple of years ago. That is some other information we can provide to the Council if you'd like to see.
Were you talking turnaround times on plan review and building safety?
Yeah, right. Oh, is that what that was?
Yes.
I knew I saw a slide in here.
Right.
Then I zoned out. No. Is there a way to track that with the permit time? How long does it take to get the permits through? Because that might help glean, at least to some extent, how many personnel hours we're spending on cases.
Are you talking building safety side or planning side?
Yours, actually.
Okay. So we're talking about processing the cases. Anyways, we have some information on that we can bring forward for the Council. We have been looking at mostly how much workload can we expect one planner to carry successfully before they start getting overloaded and the quality of the work that they do begins to drop off. And it's averaging around three cases per planner per month is what we think they can be successful with.
As I think if we look at the number of items or the number of cases coming through per month, and I think there's a way to get some of this information at least a little bit. We're not going to be able to tie it directly, but if we're seeing a high number of cases and yet the time for turnover is about the same, I'd imagine that means you're spending fewer personnel hours on those smaller cases than you would. But I think that's an important piece of information. We need to start tracking that if we're going to be making these decisions. Cutting a third of your personnel out and then having an increase in personnel hours for these smaller cases, we are going to see those times start to really increase. That's it.
Moving on, the last couple of slides that we have with regard to planning, we've looked back at the revenues that we've received the last couple of years and how that has worked in terms of cost recovery for our program as a whole, not just the areas directly working on processing the cases, but the whole service. And so you can see how that's tracked the last couple of years. Again, last year, 06, 07 was a very strong year for us. We had projected in our budget $1.3 million in revenues. We got $1.8 million in and had a lot of activity there.
Please, ma'am.
Let me just make this clear. This is separate. That isn't the money that went into what I'm going to refer to as your rainy day fund, because you folks are funded completely from fees. You are in the general fund.
Right.
And so that money went back into the general
Correct.
Fund. So are we going to get to a place where we're going to discuss whether or not we should move in the same direction with planning and zoning as we have with building safety?
We could have that conversation, Mayor and Vice Mayor, but as you can see, that what the bottom line, that percentage is, that shows you today what the fees that are
recovering.
It'd be a huge jump, and we're going to talk about a fee increase, really just to try to maintain a nominal, maybe 30% cost recovery rate. And those fees would put us in a, you know, pretty comparable position with other cities. So we, you know, we're always sensitive to where those fees rely or where they are in relationship to other cities. So we're going to look at that, but we're not, some of those fees could be used to keep some of the personnel on board, but we still anticipate that we are going to have to look at other reductions in expenditures in order to maintain, even with those fee increases, we're still have to look at some expenditure reductions.
And Chris, I'm talking about a philosophical discussion, not about these particular reductions. I mean, that would be going to a place over time. And I think we had some conversation about that as we were discussing the planning.
PCD,
thank you. Planned Community District.
Correct.
And you know, what is that philosophy and what is that percentage? And so what I was really asking, Chris, was the philosophical conversation,
sure.
not the specifics of what we're doing right here.
And we can certainly, I think when we present the fee increases to the council, you can see, even with us trying to get to, I think eventually 30% or something like that, where those fees would put us in relationship to other cities. Because if the philosophy is to get beyond 30%, then the philosophy also has to be, we're okay with recovering, you know, 35-40% of our costs and being the highest fees in the valley. And to me, that's a concern, because then that could become a discouragement or a disincentive for development within Mesa compared to other cities.
Well, of course, there's the other argument that if they're already higher than we are, did it discourage companies from going to this? Just, you know,
it's kind of like the property tax discussion.
Well, I'm just I was not going there. Let me tell you, I was not going there.
I was
just trying to say that location of a business may not have to do with $500 difference in fee.
Actually, I was going to go there. I mean, we may be higher in fees, but lower in overall costs for somebody to operate, and those costs are going to be, they're,
depends,
I know what you're thinking.
Depends what your perspective is. As a developer, you're in and out, and the other
But those fees are, whoever purchases the property,
yeah.
it's
well, we can,
going to
we
be
can
passed
have
through
discussion.
Cost to those people.
Yeah. Well,
and they're going to save their money by other things they don't have to pay for, too, so why not try to get this closer to full cost recovery? So we're the highest in the amount of fees we charge, but there are other areas of city finance and revenue that they're going to save money on by locating in Mesa.
Let us bring you those schedules so you can see what
we're
going to
have some fun. Yeah, all right.
Okay, Mayor, just got a couple more slides again to go through. Looking ahead, or I guess through the rest of this fiscal year, we had budgeted 1.5 in revenues, looking at a 29% cost recovery. Right now, our estimate, because of where the fees have been thus far this year, it's been back down to 1.2 million in revenues for the planning division and a 26% cost recovery. Projecting that forward to next year, the budget office has come up with $1.1 million in revenues for the coming year, which, based on where we start with a budget figure, would equal 24% cost recovery for the coming year. So in summary, we have caseload information that shows a very high level of activity coming through the planning division, but we're seeing smaller projects that aren't generating quite as much revenue and lowering the cost recovery that we have for the division. So with those things in mind, as City Manager already mentioned, we are looking at options for increasing our fees for greater revenues in the coming year, and how we might have to adjust our expenditures so we can bring those back in line closer to a 30% or low 30% cost recovery range.
Okay.
Mayor and Council, Christine already covered the slide on page 25, and so that concludes our presentation. We stand ready to field questions.
Mayor, just real quickly, going back to the discussion about the employees, one of the things that we want to be very sensitive to is the opportunity that we have to monitor this activity very closely. Now that we really have a very nominal fund balance, we have to be very careful about our expenditures and monitoring our revenues over time. If, however, in the next 18 months or so, maybe hope you know, it'd be nice if it was shorter, or we get a large project coming in, one of the options that we want to consider with the employees that we may have to lay off at this time is we're wanting to make sure that, we stay in contact with them even after they depart with the city, so that if one maybe on a temporary basis, we can bring them on a contractual basis to help us with surges if we get large projects, because there's still some large projects out there that are being discussed to bring them back in. But also, we're suggesting, I think, keeping the list for 2 years at least. Is that what we've talked
we're
about?
Working out with HR to see if we can do that, yeah.
I may have to. I will work with HR to make sure that we have those employees so that if things were to turn at any time, we have the flexibility. And our commitment to them would be if positions start coming open again because of the activity, we'll go to them first to bring them back with because of their experience and training. So those are some things that we are still trying to pursue. So thanks.
Okay, Scott?
Actually, Chris answered part of my question. I was going to ask how that was going to be handled as far as when we might be able to bring some folks back on if we see an increase in business. I also like the idea of having them on a list where we might be able to bring them back contractually. Part of my argument that I would make for increasing the fees, even if we are the highest, would be I want to make sure that we maintain an appropriate level of service and appropriate time. Mm-hmm. And if having a higher fee means having a better level of customer service, even though the fee is higher, we might find there's acceptance to that in the community. But having this flexibility of bringing people back for the larger projects, as long as there's some cost recovery to that, is a good idea, and it's a way of maintaining some flexibility and some service delivery levels.
If I could just speak to that real quickly, large projects or particularly sensitive projects come in, they'll still have the option of expedited service, and we really look at that separately. We can authorize overtime associated with a particular project that we're going to, you know, cost recover on that, but we'll still have that ability as particular projects come in. If they fall into that sort of high priority category for us to look at those service levels, and we'll have a little bit of flexibility on how we can handle them.
And that's terrific given the level of what's going to happen around Gateway. Right. But I think we also have to be concerned too. We can't forget the mom and pop shop.
Because
we live and die on mom and pop shops, and big business locates in a community because of mom and pop shops, and those are the ones that are going to hit the hardest by the slower response time. It's not bad service, it's just the service level we can afford to give, and those are the ones I'm concerned about too. So while there's greater flexibility with those that can afford it, you know, where are we going to be with some of the smaller ones? Question of process for layoffs. So how is that being handled? Is that being handled through seniority? Are people that are promoted going to be bumped out? Are they going to be able to go down a level to fill a
position?
There's
actually a management policy that was established, I think, a little over 2 years ago. HR takes the lead in helping us through that process. It's really an HR-driven process. Terry and John and I initially identified the positions that would be eliminated, and essentially it was across the board cut of 30% in building safety and then the associated positions in planning. Top to bottom, it wasn't all entry-level folks. Once HR received the positions that would be eliminated, they then went through, and the calculation, as I understand it, is 75% seniority and 25% performance. They came back to us then and actually gave us the list based on what they call retention points of which actual individuals would be on that layoff list.
Yeah, is that how we've handled it historically? It's the same way we've done in the
yes,
past.
Yes, it's my understanding that's exactly the process that was used 2 years ago when we went through this across the city.
Okay, that's it. Thank you.
All right, other questions? Vice Mayor.
Okay, let me just clarify that. if someone in your department isn't performing, you would take care of that through regular reviews. I don't want to somehow give people the impression that we keep people who are not performing in jobs. That's taken care of on a weekly, monthly, annual basis.
Correct.
So I don't want to give the impression that the city of Mesa says you can be a non-performer, but because you've been here a long time, we're going to keep you.
No, that's the regular performance evaluation
exactly.
process.
I just want to make that really clear because of your 75-25 formula.
I just assumed everybody was a top performer.
There you go.
Most of them are.
Okay. So this is asking for direction.
This was really just an update, letting you know what we're currently doing, how we're moving forward. We'll be back in March as part of the overall discussion of fees and charges, so certainly we will have some proposals and we can have more discussion on that. But unless there's something in particular that you would like to provide direction on.
Right. Any other comments this morning? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next item is here, presentation, discuss and provide direction on the fiscal year 08-09 budget for transit services, including but not limited to bus service and dial-a-ride.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I wanted to give you an update on the transit this year and start out with just a summary of what we were talking about a year ago. If you recall, a year ago, our dial-a-ride service was in need of an additional $1 million in addition to the $2.5 that we received from Prop 400, or what they're now calling the Public Transportation Fund, PTF. And wanted to give you an update on that service and what we said so that we can start the discussion. If you recall, we asked, Transit asked for $1 million that would be replaced in this upcoming fiscal year with savings associated with two new routes that the Prop 400, our PTF, would pick up, and that's the Southern and Dobson routes. Now, as the Prop 400 picks up those two routes, that'll be a savings to the city of Mesa of $1.6 million. So that's really kind of the good news on the dial-a-ride side. As an update to the service, we got a mid-year update of dial-a-ride from the RPTA, and we're right within budget. If we project out the next 6 months, our local contribution will be $860,000, just under $1 million. So we're right on track. RPTA has been doing a good job of managing that, as well as some of our ride choice programs that are reducing the impact to the city of Mesa. As I mentioned, it's actually going to be starting July 28th, not July 1st. The PTF will start funding the Southern Avenue and Dobson Road bus routes. And as I mentioned, this will provide a $1.6 million savings to our transit operations. And on the conservative side, we have projected 1.2 of this to address future dial-a-ride funding requirements. So while we're a million today, we're being a little bit conservative and saying we're going to set aside 1.2 for future dial-a-ride. Additionally, one of the things that we had requested in the past was to circulate the Dobson Road bus route through Riverview. And this actually will happen starting July 28th of the upcoming year. So that will be implemented. We've got a bus pull out right in front of Walmart, and it'll go up to Bass Pro Lanes and go right through the middle of that development. And we think that will be a great improvement to our service. Just with the opening of Riverview, we have seen double-digit percentage increase in ridership on that route. So there's activity there, and development is good for transit. One of the things that I wanted to do is just give you a sense of all the new routes that are coming on in Prop 400, because it is pretty extensive. In fact, as this whole program is fulfilled, all but two of our local routes will be funded by the city of Mesa. So if you look at this list here, you'll see these are the routes that will be coming on in the next year.
Stop. I think you flipped that the wrong way. All but two routes will be funded by regional money.
There we go. I'm sorry. Yeah, all but two will be funded by Prop 400. when the plan is built out.
Okay.
These next three slides really talk about the phases of implementation, and you'll see that the routes that are in white there are routes that exist today that the region is going to fund, and the yellow routes are actually new service that will come on. So this next year we'll have Dobson and Southern will be funded by the region, as well the Red Mountain Express that will run on the 202, the Main Street local route, as well as our Main Street BRT, with those two starting in December with the opening of light rail. Phase two, you can see there's a lot of routes here. I won't go through them individually, but the next two to come on are Power Road, which will be a new route, and then funding for Gilbert Road, which we do today, as well as the list. And then phase three, you can see some more express and local routes as well.
Scott has a question.
I want yes.
to tie these, while we're on it, I want to tie these new routes onto a discussion of the Dial-A-Ride, because Dial-A-Ride has some significant cost.
Sure.
When you overlay our routes on a map, Dial-A-Ride service has to be extended, what is it, a quarter mile or half mile?
Three-quarters of a mile of
existing
route.
Three-quarters of a mile, okay.
Yes.
When you put these new routes on the map, and considering what we currently have to serve with Dial-A-Ride, do any of these routes extend the level of service to areas that currently we do not have to provide Dial-A-Ride to?
What they do is, the way we've been doing this, it really affects the weekend service. So as a Southern will now have service not just on Saturday but also on Sunday. Mm-hmm. What we're doing when it's an extension of a service into a new date, as for Sunday, we're using the three-quarter rule for that Dial-A-Ride.
Okay. But do we, so we're looking at a new day. Are we looking at any new territory that we're going to have to cover with our Dial-A-Ride services also?
It depends on the situation. For example, down at ASU Poly, there was a new route that was implemented on Williamsfield Road that comes into ASU that provided a little bit of service on Sunday.
Right.
So, yes, we're using the three-quarter rule anytime there's a new area or a new day being served.
There's no – and that goes down Power Road?
No, Williamsfield across.
Williamsfield across. So we would have to cover everything
just in that little
Polytechnic
circle.
Campus.
Right.
To Dial-A-Ride, which is probably
very minute, yes.
Okay. Just want to make sure we're careful with how that's going to budget out the new territories and new days and make sure that
right.
$1.2 million is going to adequately fund that, because that would be, what, the fourth time in my 2 years that we'd have to have a discussion about Dial-A-Ride.
Right, and we're watching that very carefully.
Thank you.
We're concerned.
Okay.
As far as the budget outlook for next year, one of the major impacts that is going to be hitting us is we believe the Joint Legislative Budget Committee at the state is going to suspend the Local Transportation Assistance Fund 2, which is the Powerball money that we've been using for transit operation and maintenance. So this is an impact of $1.5 million that we need to address. In working with the budget office, we've really come up with two scenarios looking at either cuts or service reduction. The first scenario, you can see the first element is a 5% reduction in what is our general fund portion, that's $188,000, as well as a 1.15 LTAF for a total of 1.3. The second scenario looks at the 1.15 LTAF elimination, as well as the match portion that comes from our general fund, which is $760,000, for a total of 1.9. So we've put together some scenarios of what that looks like for a discussion. The first scenario, the $1.3 million cut, one of the things that we were asked to do was really manage our budget, and we think we have. If you look at the first three items that I'll talk about, the first is that O&M net savings from the Southern and Dobson. We use $1.2 million for Dial-A-Ride. That leaves us about $400,000 savings that we can account for. So that's the first savings, really comes from the region picking up Dobson Road. The second light item there involves the Route 45, which is the Broadway Road route. Currently, we buy that service from the city of Tempe, and it's approximately 15% higher cost than purchasing it from the RPTA. So about a year ago, we asked RPTA, Tempe, Scottsdale, if we could exchange that Broadway route with either Scottsdale Road or Hayden, McClintock, and they are working on that right now. So we will see a savings from purchasing that route from RPTA rather than the city of Tempe, about $234,000. The other savings is the O&M savings associated with the selling of the operation and maintenance facility at Greenfield, about $168,000. The first impact that would really affect our customers would be reducing the service frequency on Saturday bus service and going from 30-minute service that we have today down to 1 hour service frequency. So that's our first real impact that we're looking at. The second option would be impacting the Route 136, which is Gilbert Road, and between the hours of 9 and 3 also going to a 1 hour frequency. Now, the reason we only looked at that route was it's not impacted by Title VI, as well as we've got those extensions that go and serve Boeing that we don't want to affect in the AM and the PM peak time. So, you know, this is the scenario one that we looked at. And also, if we implemented this in spring, there would be a one-time savings of about $70,000 because we're implementing it before July 1st. Scenario two is the first three items that we can that we can implement without any impacts we want to do and we will do. The first real impact to our service would be just eliminating Saturday bus service. You can see that saves about $800,000, as well as the impact to the reducing the frequency of the Route 136 Gilbert Road. And you see, it just gets us a little bit short of our goal. But through future funding of the Gilbert Road route, you know, in the following year, we'd make that up. Staff never likes to recommend service cuts, but under the scenario of the state cutting $1.15 million, our recommendation would be that the first three items there that don't have an impact to our customers, as well as reducing the Saturday frequency to 1 hour. Now, one of the things that we don't want to do as staff is impact Dial-A-Ride, and this would not do that. It would only impact the only thing that would do is impact the Saturday bus service, reducing the frequency from 30 minutes to 1 hour headways. However, if we did want to just entirely cut Saturday bus service, we would need to go through a public process, which would mean a public meeting, as well as going to council, a 30-day implementation period, and then implementing those later this spring. So wanted to put those out on the table for discussion, and any direction that you could give us would be helpful as we're going through the budget process.
Okay. Let's start with this. Scott, first, you're also representing the city now on RPTA, so.
Yeah.
Weigh in.
My fault already? I have one question to start, and that has to do with the Saturday, the 1 hour frequency. At what point in the frequency, 1 hour frequency refers to pickup every hour.
Right.
So at one point you can spread the frequency out just so far. At what point does the route become useless to riders?
Well, because it runs into adjacent cities, the real impact is every other bus would basically, coming from another city, would turn around and go back, let's say, into Gilbert. So, and every other bus would run through into Mesa. So anything more than an hour service would not be, you know, from a service perspective, efficient or really good at all. So
do you have any statistics that show that a 1 hour frequency is still a route worth having?
Off the top of my head, I don't have that. No, we could look into that. I know that in the region here, one-hour service is really the minimum that's mm-hmm. been done.
That's generally in outlying areas, is it not?
Sure, sure.
And we're talking about an area that's fairly close to the downtown area?
Yeah, we're talking about all of our local routes.
So, I suppose that would be the discussion that we would have to have, is at what point are we just having a service that isn't going to serve anybody?
No.
Do you have the ridership on Saturdays?
Yes. I don't have it with me here today, but we do have a significant amount of people who do use the bus on Saturdays. The reason that we as staff like the one-hour service is for the people that do rely on it, particularly for their jobs, they still have a way to do it. Yes, it is less inconvenient, but that's life. But we still are providing a service to those people who need to get to their jobs at work on Saturday.
Kyle?
So hypothetically, you have somebody traveling from Gilbert or Tempe coming to Mesa, and if they're on a 30-minute schedule, we're on a one-hour schedule, that individual would have to get off the bus and sit there and wait for another bus that would go all the way through.
That is correct, Councilman Jones.
Mayor, just let me clarify for the council. This is just part. One of the reasons we brought this one forward is council had asked us to give a report. I think about maybe a month ago. I think we were 30 days late on this report about where we were with Dial-A-Ride, where we were with transit, because some of the decisions we had made last year to fund this at $1 million out of general funds in order to keep it going for another year, because that was the discussion we were having
a year ago,
I guess, that how we were going to fund that gap. And the idea was, well, we could bridge it, the gap, for this 1 year with $1 million from the general fund until such time that the Dobson Road routes were then picked up and funded by the region. What we're showing you is that that's going to happen. The concern we have, and I have specifically, is the reliance upon the operating and maintenance budget for LTAP $2, which are not a certainty, and to include those as part of an assumed O&M revenue source, I think is a great concern because of the discussions that are happening in the legislature. And frankly, even if the legislature weren't looking at it, I'm not sure that relying upon lottery proceeds is the appropriate way to assume a recurring revenue source for operations. So that's part of what we're trying to manage in the reductions, is to deal with that concern. And then in addition, we've shown about the 5%. So we're really all of this at the end of the day may only benefit our shortfall is by that $188,000 if we can get the full amount that we're looking for. So, and that would be the 1.15 and the one was $188,000 combined, the $1,338,000. And so there's going to have to be some tough decisions whether we reduce frequency. You can see we've taken all the top three are really things that are savings really that have no impact on service. They're part of the savings of routes and who's managing routes or because of bus facility O&M savings cost. But now we get into service, and that's, I think, the question that we have to raise to the council. And one of the reasons we're bringing it to you today is because if we do make the decision, there's such a huge lead time on these decisions, and that's why we have to bring them to you today, because even if we were to eliminate a Saturday bus service, which is an option, it takes the hearings and the process and notification that we have to build into that. So that's why we wanted to bring this to you today, obviously well ahead of some of the discussions we're having on other activities departments in the city. But obviously if we go to the one-hour frequency, that doesn't require the same notification process and hearing process. Is that correct?
That's correct. We would need to obviously notify.
We would notify, but we didn't have to go through the formal.
Right. We don't have to go through the formal process.
But at some point, I'm just the council. We talked about where our revenues are coming in. This is a draw upon the general fund, and so it does have a direct bearing upon the savings or the relationship that we can, whatever we can do to help mitigate against the shortfalls in sales tax revenues that we're seeing in the future. But that's why we wanted to bring this to you today, to at least outline some scenarios and some options that are being considered. I'm concerned about even the staff recommendation, if that's really going far enough. It isn't quite give us all the savings that we're really looking for across the board at the end of the day. So, but it does get us going down that path by not including the Gilbert Route 136. We're really kind of short the total amount of savings that we're looking for from these departments. But we could, I guess, come back later and reconsider the Route 136 at another date, because it doesn't require the hearing process. It's a council action. I think really the direction we need from council today is, if the thinking is that you want to consider the elimination of Saturday service, we need to start that now. If the thinking is we probably wouldn't do that, but we may want to consider the one-hour frequency savings, we can bring that back in the context of all the other budget discussions. But if it was the council's, because we've talked about that in the past, sometimes it's better to go ahead and maybe eliminate the service or whatever versus really reducing down the service such a point that you've effectively done the same thing. We just want to give the council that option to consider that today because of the lead time that it would take to realize that savings.
Okay. And I don't have a good enough recall to remember the Saturday route numbers, and so I'm having a little trouble with the Saturday service, comparing it to weekdays or something else to see if it should be eliminated. So I don't know if two people ride it or 2,000 people ride it.
I can get those numbers for you.
Yeah. Okay. But I would say probably the number one scenario that was outlined, not the staff recommended, but number one is probably where I'd lean towards. And could probably go to number two if I knew that there weren't a whole lot of people using it on Saturday, that it was a lower frequency than it is during the weekdays, I'd probably eliminate the Saturday. Scott?
What are some of the other possible consequences of eliminating that Saturday service? Does that automatically eliminate Dial-A-Ride? Would we have problems restarting that route if we wanted to later, when the economics work a little bit better?
We don't plan on impacting Dial-A-Ride with any of these scenarios. So okay. That would stay the same. One of the things that would happen with scenario two is the new regional routes that come on, the ones Main Street, Main Street BRT, Southern, and Dobson, those will have Saturday and Sunday service. So it will be a little awkward to our users, where we may not have Saturday service on local routes, but we'll have Saturday and Sunday service on regionally funded routes. So that's another impact.
It remind me, when does the BRT start?
That the BRT starts in December with when rail opens. Dobson and Southern start this summer in July.
Okay, thank you.
Mike?
I'm assuming that the state reduction will impact other cities also. It's not just us. What would the possibility be of a rate increase by the region that would make up this difference? Are the rates capped? There has to be public hearings on rates?
Yeah, in fact, the region just implemented a fare change in December, along with implementing new fare boxes. So one of the changes, while they kept the rate the same at $1.25 for a local trip, they eliminated tokens and transfer. So in a sense, you know, you pretty much, it requires people, if they're doing a trip and a return, to buy an all-day pass, which in a sense is a fare increase, even though the rate has stayed the same. So that's really a regional issue that they just went through, because they wanted to get all the bus fares in line, get established for rail, as well as eliminate the tokens and transfers.
I'm just wondering if that's a competitive rate, or with the state looking at not just this year but next year a reduction, if a rate increase wouldn't be in order from the region to try to pick up some of this.
I'm not going to guess on that. I just know that going through the regional process, we just, you know, the region just did that. So.
And it requires public hearings on a rate increase?
Extensive public hearings throughout the valley, input from all the service providers, very extensive process.
Mayor, if I could. Mike, the other thing the region did recently is they're increasing the efficiency of the collection. Part of the problem with the rate trip with the transfers is particularly, I won't pick on ASU since I'm a Sun Devil, but they're rather, the ingenuity of college students sometimes with sitting in the back of the bus with their rate transfer, just passing the ticket back out the window to their buddy who gets on. So we're getting all the collections that we are due as part of this, part of the rate change and the change in some of the technology as well. Scott.
Mayor and Councilmember Whalen, I was just whispering in Mike's ear, we had to fight hard, and the mayor really led that fight to keep the rates what they are currently today. The City of Phoenix and some of the other regional partners had proposed actually lowering the rates, and we said certainly in these times with rising fuel costs that this was not the time to be looking at decreasing the rates, and that was a hard-fought battle, and luckily folks saw the light and came along with us on that issue. So,
Vice Mayor.
Thanks, Mayor. I was going to point out that you were the one who led the way on getting that fare increase. It was a fare stabilization or whatever we want to call that. I am not in favor of our eliminating the Saturday bus service. I think that there are so many implications in terms of people's employment, whether those people are handicapped. You know, if they're blind, it isn't like they have a choice to go and drive a car. Additionally, we have increasingly implemented more and more stringent drunk driving laws in the state of Arizona, and we have taken people's driving privileges away from them. And as a result of that, their method for getting to work, and believe me, I'm not sitting here arguing in favor of drunk driving, you know, but we need people to keep working. We need them to move ahead in their lives in positive ways, and so we want to put them on a bus to get them to work. I think going to the 1 hour, while it is not ideal, it is, I think, the correct way to go. I am a little confused by the one-time savings piece, so you're going to need to walk through that with me one more time, Mike. I'm on your slides 9 and 10.
Sure.
Because in one instance, you have implement in spring one-time savings, $70,000, implement in May one-time savings, $150,000. And I'm assuming that the implementation, the difference here is because it's going to one-hour frequency as opposed to Saturday elimination. But why one place it says spring, why another place it says May?
I can explain that. The one-time savings would be savings that we would see actually this fiscal year, not in the budget, because we'd be implementing that before July 1st. So if we were just to go to 1 hour frequency, we would be saving those about half the trips for a couple months. Say May and June, we'd be having 2 months savings. If we implemented in May, we go through the process, we'd be eliminating all of the trips on Saturday for a couple months. So it's just implementing it before July 1st.
It's current year savings, not the recurring savings for a full year.
And the specificity of May in one case versus spring in the other case has to do with the hearing process that you would have to go through with elimination.
If we just went to the 1 hour service, we would just need to advertise that on the bus, work with RPTA and Veolia with the contract to adjust the contract, but we don't have a public process that's required by Title VI.
And I am not, I think we're going to have to look at the Route 136 issue, because I'm looking at this and thinking, I don't, you know, pardon the pun, but I think you can bet that LTAP 2 will be swept. So I'm concerned that our margins here aren't where they need to be. So I understand that it gives you service infrequency and, you know, that inconsistency, sure. But as opposed to elimination, I think it's probably the way to go.
Okay. Looks like leaning towards scenario number one then. Is that fair, Kyle?
That was what I would go to. I cannot agree with eliminating Saturday bus service altogether, but the scenario one is probably a necessity.
And Mayor and Council, what we'll do is, with that, appreciate that direction. That's really what we needed to know today. We'll just now include these as we bring forward all the anticipated reductions or revenues for the coming budget. We'll just include this, so we'll continue to be able to bring this forward in a discussion in context with everything else we'll be talking about too. So thank you. That's what we needed from the direction from council.
Okay. Number three, then.
Thank you.
Let's move on. That's to hear a presentation to discuss and provide direction for fiscal year 08-09 budget for human service funding. This one I wanted to have a little discussion. Please have a seat. But on the context of this council versus the new council and direction that we give. In the past, after we've had elections, we've actually had joint budget discussions with both parties. And as we move forward and try to give some direction here, I wanted to see, because the new council, when they are seated with five new members, are going to have a short period of time to come up with a wrap up a budget and present it. So some of it's a timing issue, some of it's how comfortable are we making decisions for next year's budget to wrap up, and whether the new council will have a chance to inject their opinion into that, or change our decisions, I guess, if we're going to proceed forward and make them. So, Chris, did you have a concept on how this will unfold?
I'm going to listen to everybody, hear what they have to say. It's a great question, Mayor, and I think we've talked about inviting those who are considered council-elect, I'm not sure what the proper term is when that's done, that we would invite them to have a seat here at the table to engage in the discussion about the budget. I've mentioned this to all the council candidates in an orientation we had, that when they take office in that first week of June, within 3 weeks, I think, that they will be voting on the budget. So it behooves all of them to be very much engaged in the process well in advance of that, because, frankly, we adopt the, I forget what Chuck calls it, it's like the preliminary budget, tentative budget, thank you. Sorry, thank you. Something tentative budget early on, and really there are very few changes because of the way we have to publish the budget and declare kind of our upper limits of expenditures well in advance of the actual adoption of the budget. So the input really even has to come before June about where we're headed, and this council has done a very good job of that and giving us that direction. We kind of spend the months of March and April and parts of May, but by the latter part of May, we've already started really narrowing down the options in the budget and the direction so that we can start putting those in place. So I will have to, hopefully, as we have everyone sitting around the table and we get the wisdom and insight from the outgoing council members and that participation of the budget and hearing those who are elected also weighing in, we'll have to kind of draw up some of the proposals and try to get that direction moving forward so that really by the end of May, 1st of June, we pretty much know where the budget's going. Because it's very difficult sometimes, and you all have seen this, when you make decisions to change any activity to either reduce it or not to reduce it, it may have other consequences throughout the budget. And it's a great concern for us as we're working with numbers. And you all know that there's a huge dynamic that can take place between the different funds that we have to be very careful that we don't have any unintended consequences by making last-minute changes. So I'm going to try to encourage and work with the council-elects as they come on board to get direction and feedback from them. But our plan is to continue, I think, in the latter part of March to begin bringing to you, again, like we've done today, further discussions about proposals and reductions in expenditures. Frankly, that's really what we're going to be talking about. To move forward and try to meet our shortfall and looking out into the future. What we're proposing to do today for the human services presentation is we have a process where we have a board that engages in the discussion and makes recommendations to the council. In the past, 2 years ago, we asked them to make some reductions kind of at the last minute, and I felt like that might have been a little unfortunate for them in that process. I would ask, what we're asking the council, and I think the staff will present, kind of go through the details of this, is we're asking them to consider just as we are all the departments, what an option would look like if we reduced their budget or their allocation by 5% and how they would go about doing it. And Mayor has brought up me an interesting consideration. Is it to be considered as a 5% across the board and what that looks like, or is it a, I'm not sure how to say it, Mayor, maybe a reduction in
take out one program.
A program specifically to get to that same goal. So, but maybe that's part of the discussion we can have today.
Scott?
Why not look at this holistically like we, back 2 years ago when the first budget cuts were made after the election? There was a whole list of various programs and the council almost gave direction on where we wanted those cuts to come from. Shouldn't we have that same type of discussion? How is this situation any different than what happened then?
And certainly it'd be welcome if the council wants to come up with a list so that instead of trying to reduce levels of services throughout the city that you wanted to eliminate services, we could do that. I think the difference, we talked about this some time ago, the difference was when we did this 2 years ago, we were adjusting for a structural imbalance. There was a need to make complete elimination of services to get in alignment structurally with the finances. The idea that regardless of what was going to happen in the economy, we were in a position where we knew we had to reduce and eliminate services. I think the question is, this is different in some ways because it is based, we believe, on, well, as you can see across the valley and across the country, on an economic cycle. And so the question is, if we handle this like we did 2 years ago by eliminating services, what that effectively does, though, it says you will not get those services back for a significant amount of period of time by doing that. If we do it by more of a reduction of services throughout the city, then maybe what that allows us to do is a little more flexibility to respond in the future, if possible, upturn in the economy in a year and a half, 2 years from now. So I don't know there's a substantial difference there, but if that's the council's preference, then I think that we would need to sit down and come up with that list again, because now we're talking about, you know, as before on the list, not just eliminating hours of service, but eliminating the service itself. And they don't come back, in, at least on our forecasts, for at least another, it could be 5 years.
It's a little more difficult when looking at it like this to put human services into the context of the entire city budget where we need to be,
right,
or any. I'm picking on this one because
and we're not asking council to make the decision today on this. All we're asking is the direction to send to the board and giving them some direction to give us an option of what it would they could do the option of what the funding looks like today and their recommendation, but in addition, how would they handle a 5% reduction, just like we're asking all the other departments to do.
So, but at the end of this, is there, we're going to have a summary where we see all of that in the context
then
of the
then this would come back to
operation.
The council. It would come back to the council for you to consider those cuts.
Okay.
Thank you. Vice Mayor?
I think that this is different because we're sending this to a board to make a decision. And last year, without the intent of the council to send a negative message to that board, we send a negative message to that board. What they heard us saying was that their input didn't matter, and they had gone through the process of examining all of the agencies. Now, there were public policy reasons that we reversed them on one of the decisions, but they didn't understand why that was. And, you know, I went and talked with them, and it was a, you know, there were a lot of really not good feelings towards us, and I can understand why they had them. I'm not upset with them. They felt like they had gone through and done their due diligence, and then they got reversed by us. And so I think for us to give them some policy direction rather than saying, well, thanks for trying to guess what was on my mind. You guessed wrong this year. You guessed wrong the year before. I mean, that's just not fair to them. So if our intention is to just go through and make these allocations without taking input from them, then I think we ought to tell them that long before they start that process and say, you know, well, I guess you can feed us a little information along the way. And that's an okay policy direction to say, give us the information and about your recommendations, you know, but don't tell us where you want the money to go because we're going to tell you where the money's going. But the other issue here has to do with the ABC funds, which is you know, it isn't a 5% decrease, it's a 9% decrease because of the choices that people have made in terms of their donations. They're probably feeling the same thing that we're all feeling and tightening down a little bit here. And so the question is, do we separate out the two funds? As you all know, I am a strong proponent of having these agencies in the community doing this work. I think that they are saving money for the city. But I don't think we can make up out of the general fund for what didn't happen in the ABC fund. I think we have to hold those as separate accounts. So, you know, I don't know if that's the kind of direction
that would be helpful,
that you're looking for, but I think we're going to have to look at those as separate accounts. If we're looking at across-the-board 5% cuts, then I think we need to say, give that direction to them, that we're going to look at 5% cuts. But the other direction that I would give that board, and when I spoke with them last year, I said, I need you to know that I'm probably going to have the same feelings about a couple of places that I absolutely think we're going to have to fund because the impact on our police, public safety, is so significant. If we don't fund in an area of domestic violence, if we don't fund, and I'm not going to go, you know, but in an area of where our police officers can go with somebody that they pick up off the street, and rather than putting them in jail at a very high cost, we have an alternative placement for them when it's a drug or alcohol issue. And so I would need from them a very strong reason why we shouldn't fund in that area. And so I think I need to give that feedback to that committee. So if that's the kind of feedback you're looking from the council, that's my feedback to you. Now, I don't know how the rest of the council feels about it, but that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah, I concur with most of the sentiments. The 5% cut, not necessarily every program, but the total program gets cut 5%. So you may eliminate, and I picked out a couple here that I went through, some were public safety and they ought to be fully funded. Others, which one did I pick on in particular? I think it was a Boys and Girls Club teen program or something like that. I mean, you may just eliminate that whole program and keep some of the others. So I would look to the Human Services Committee with that input to take a look at it themselves. But and if we're going for 5% direction, then that's what it takes to make the budget work out, then I think that's probably fine. I would probably even suggest increasing it beyond 5% because I don't think human services, unless it's directly related to police, and several of these are an essential services of government. I think we've had that discussion before. When we did make the structural imbalance and that came through, we projected this 3-5% growth over a number of years. So at some point, we ought to hit the economic cycle, and I thought we kind of hit it, so we should have had some more fund balances. So I'm not sure we made quite the structural adjustments that we needed to make through these cycles, and we'll find out over time whether we did or didn't. But that's a little scary thought. The other aspect, and it's not directly human services, but it's what service delivery demands fluctuate in our budget, Chris, that we can make adjustments more on a economic cycle, and we just did that with zoning and the rest. So there may be some subsets of our budget that are related to workload and economic cycles that we have to also factor in, and we change those. But the other workforce that picks up trash and does the rest, that has doesn't fluctuate as much. So we may have to fine-tune our budget forecasting a little bit to take into adjustment what we can do easily in an economic cycle to adjust and what we can't. And not easily, but and I think we're getting to that through this economic cycle to know what adjustments can be made. So we're not straight lining all these departments out. We can actually fluctuate some of them and kind of fine-tune our economic forecast model. Vice Mayor?
Yeah, but it also works the other way, which is in a down economic cycle, I think, and by the way, I think that that's good thinking. I just want to continue the dialogue, which is that in a down economic cycle, you're more likely, I believe, at least from what I've seen, to have more domestic violence problems. You're more likely to have other human service-related issues that then increase your calls for service on the public safety side. And so that's the other problem with that, you know, 5% across the board thing, that it doesn't address what you just talked about. There may be an area where we don't have as much need for service, but on the other side, we get an uptick in need for services in a down economic cycle.
Right, but I think we need to look at that magnitude. Just the P&Z and building safety was over $1 million, just, and this is the total program is $1.3 million. Yeah. So the magnitude of those adjustments, I think, are very significant. I'll just throw that out. So let's get into the discussion about human services. Who makes a decision? Do we look at a 5% cut? You want to have them look at program, total program elimination for some, or give it to their discretion? I'd like to give them the kind of the task of looking at 5% at their discretion on whether it's programs or across the board would be my suggestion.
I concur with the idea of a 5% reduction, but I would prefer that it be depending on the program, looking through a lens of public safety. Which ones does public safety, and public safety is going to have some input, the police department in particular, which ones do they see as being directly related to what they do? And those are the ones that should be spared, and perhaps the ones that are more recreational are the ones that are cut to a greater extent. That would be the policy direction I would give. Now, to what extent we're at that, we have a lot of recreational ones looking at this, that's going to be tough, but those directly related to public safety should have be ranked higher for funding.
Okay. Did you want to go through a quick presentation? And I think we're already to the direction aspect of this thing.
We'll go through the presentation and then we'll continue the discussion.
Everybody has read the council report, so I didn't know if it was a duplicate or not. Go ahead then.
I'm Lisa Wilson with the Office of Human Services, and I am here today to talk about our 5% proposed reduction in human services funding. As you know, you all adopted the Community Safety Support Investment Model back in 2005, and that's what the Human Services Board uses when they make their recommendations to you. We engage programs that impact safety, programs that encourage independence and self-sufficiency. We also avoid duplication of services, fund programs that have a adverse financial support and sustainability, prevent long-term dependence on public resources, and also programs that have a specific outcome. There's five funding areas for human services. We have prevention and early intervention. Those are programs that help youth and families. One of the programs that you mentioned was the Boys and Girls Club Teen Program. That is one of those programs that fall under that. Transitional services, which help remove barriers for families and individuals. We have our crisis services, which is helps people that are in crisis and need immediate assistance. Long-term system support, individual and families that maintain independence. System support makes the social service delivery system more accessible to folks, those that are disabled and seniors. Agencies that we are currently funding with general funds and ABC, we have CAS, Central Arizona Shelter Services, that is a women's shelter, which is in Phoenix. Child Crisis Center, there's a children's shelter. Community Bridges, which is a drug substance abuse treatment center. The police use that quite often. They're able to drop off folks which have issues there. We have a New Leaf, and they provide four different types of program areas for the city of Mesa. And there's Save the Family, that is a transitional shelter for families. We have Mesa Boys and Girls Club, the Mesa Family YMCA, which has the First Offenders Program. Those youth come through the Maricopa County Juvenile Court system as referrals, and they get a lot of peer and mentoring through that program. And again, we have Community Bridges Community Bridges has a split portion. They get some monies from the general fund and then other from the ABC fund. We have Mark Center, which helps disabled and developmentally disabled adults and children. The East Valley Senior Center, which is the home-delivered meals, Caring Corps, and the retired seniors volunteer program. Then there's the United Food Bank, and they provide emergency food boxes. Here you'll see the general fund history for human services from the past 4 years and also for the proposed 08-09 with the 5% reduction. And this is the ABC funding history. As you can see, between 04 and 05 and 05 and 06, there was a reduction in donations from utility customers, and we propose that that is probably due to the reformatting of the utility bill. And as you can see, for this year, for 08-09, we have our donations have decreased, which will cause us to provide an allocation of $108,000, which is like $43,000 difference. And here is our proposed funding, what it's going to look like right now, 08-09, with a total amount of 923, and then an 08-09 with the reductions would be 839.
And Mayor and Council, this presentation is based upon that 5% reduction, which all departments were required to build in. And we realize this is totally at your discretion. And so we are, as Chris had stated before, we are looking for your direction on this and how we should proceed with our board.
And Carolyn, when do we go to the board? What's the timing on that?
Actually, in May, they will be done with their site visits and their recommendations. Throughout all of our meetings, we'll be discussing each site visit and agency as we go along. So by May, they will be able to come to you with their recommendations. So what we're asking right now is how much money would they be able to allocate? And then I can go to them with that amount. And then they can make their recommendations based on that.
Okay, on page 2 of your staff report here, you had a couple of alternatives listed also, and I appreciate that being done. Mm-hmm. I'm not in favor of making up the $38,000, so that's going to require more than a 5% cut. If you're looking for 5% plus taking the $38,000 into account, so that would be my direction is you're going to have to make up that $38,000 and the ABC reduce contributions plus a 5% cut on top. Otherwise, we're going to be looking throughout the rest of the budget to figure out where we get $38,000. Right, Mike.
It's a question on the reduction of that. I guess that's the 153 to the 108. That's mm-hmm. what you're talking about.
Yes.
I don't have that report, and I don't know why I didn't get it. Just maybe I'd out of town or something and didn't get it. What's the reason for that reduction?
The decrease in ABC?
The projected decrease?
Well, we're thinking that it could be because of the online banking. When folks donate with their utility bill, if they do it through their bank, and they do add that extra dollar in, right? The banks can't decipher that extra dollar is going to ABC. So basically what they end up with is a credit in their bill. And I have had calls at the end of the year, folks saying, I donated to ABC, why didn't my bill reflect that? Well, it's because they've been using online banking. So that's one of the reasons. We are trying to build public awareness of the ABC program through various media, trying to do it at a low cost, of course. So hopefully we'll get some more donations in there.
Yeah, it's confusing to folks. It was, in my opinion, it was much better when we fooled them.
Not mine.
But, we lost that battle. I want to make sure that I can talk about this. Several of these agencies are our customers. I know we're talking general terms. I'm probably okay.
Yeah, Councilmember Whalen, you're correct. Because we're just talking about the contribution to the general fund overall, you do not have a conflict on that. It's only when it's narrowed down to specific programs that you would.
I'm of the opinion that everybody's got to take part of the load, and unfortunately, if you look at the state funding, most of the nonprofits get their primary funding through the state, and those funding sources are drying up. They're really attacking those funds. So this is going to be a double hit for these folks. But, you know, they're used to it. They've been fighting for dollars ever since I've been involved with nonprofits. So it's just, you know, what type of services does this state wish to provide to those communities? I would hope that we don't hit that $38,000 additional loss in the ABC, and I would hope that there's something that this council perhaps could do to better talk about the ABC fund and get the word out there to try to make those dollars up.
Vice Mayor.
This is an ABC comment. You are exactly right about the online banking issue, and I think that that is going to get worse, not better. In our family, we actually increased our donation to United Way because we do online banking, and our ABC thing was happening the way you said. So I think we might have to look at some other ways of addressing this, because we're going to see, I believe, as more and more people move to online banking, unless we can figure out a way to deal with it with the online banking thing, I think we see this number continue to go down.
Well, yeah, and actually, we keep talking about internally on the utilities customer service side, we actually want, it's better for us for those to do online banking and do it through the internet, because maybe the internet makes it easier to do the ABC, but because then it avoids our costs on the utility side. But yeah, so maybe we need to start thinking about another approach to seeking out, making people aware of these programs.
And I would certainly urge people who, you know, who encountered the same thing that we did, you know, do what we did. Either give more to United Way, which was the choice that our family made, or you could donate a check to the ABC program if you want to, if you want to put it through that direction. But I don't think that, I don't know how we can address this because of the online banking thing. I think we're going to have, Brian wants to talk about it.
I'm sorry, Vice Mayor. And you're absolutely right on the online bank. I just wanted to clarify, though, if somebody pays through the city's website, City Utilities, they can do the $1 donation through that. It's the online banking where they go directly through their bank that then gets lost.
And a lot of us have just set it up so it just automatically, right, you know, pays on this day of the month, that pays, you know, and you know, you go in and pay it. And so that's where it gets hit. You're correct, right, through the website. But so many of us have moved to a different scenario.
Okay. Other feedback on this item?
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Number four is hear a presentation, discuss and provide direction on federal legislation agenda.
Council. You know, it's been a long morning, so I'll try to go through this quickly. What Brent is passing out several pieces of information dealing with both an update on our fiscal year 08 appropriation awards that were signed, into law by the President in late December of last year, and then what we're recommending as staff that the city submit on our behalf to Congress for possible award this year. And also in the audience, I have several of the representatives from the various departments, and also Casey Denny from Phoenix Mesa Gateway here if there's any technical questions about the projects that we're proposing. So, Mayor, with that, I'll just quickly walk through a PowerPoint, and I'll try to make it quick because I know you guys have been here for a while. Just quick overview, the second session of the 110th Congress convened in mid-January. The President delivered his State of the Union address in late January and also released his executive budget that has numerous spending reductions for his recommendation for the federal level. Of course, Congress right now, the Democrats hold a two-seat majority in the United States Senate and a several-seat majority in the U.S. House. Mesa delegation, I think it should be noted, of course, this will be the first full session where we'll have the benefit of having Senator John Kyle in his new leadership role as minority whip, and we certainly appreciate his leadership in the Senate. And then, of course, on the House side, Congressman Harry Mitchell, which we'll be talking about very soon, serves on the very important Transportation Infrastructure Committee, including the Transportation Aviation Subcommittee. So that's been a great help to us and to the airport, as we'll discuss. Mayor, just quickly on FY08, just because we have an updated council on this, though I know we've talked one-on-one, but the city did receive four awards in the budget that was passed by Congress and signed by the President. $1.75 million for Phoenix Mesa Gateway for taxiway improvements, $306,000 for the police department for a training simulator for public safety operations. Vachelet Akmel received $676,000, and the Mesa program, which is being a cooperative effort between Mesa Public Schools and the Mesa PD, received $144,000. So we were happy that all of those were included in the signed budget. Before we go to the specific projects, Mayor, just wanted to talk generally very quickly about some of the issues that this council has asked us to monitor and to look at through both Congress and the different federal agencies, starting with Homeland Security. And I know we're going to have further discussions about this, but we've been working closely on finding out information on the 287G training opportunities and funding. Also, public safety interoperability. That's, of course, an important component for us right now. UWASI grants and also MMRS grants, as we continue to monitor that and assess the impact that will have on our public safety's ability to reach out for those grants both regionally and nationally. Of course, we continue to work closely with the Army Corps of Engineers on the Vachelet-Akmel project, including current conversations we're having with the city of Tempe about possible linkages between Vachelet and the Rio Salado project. There's currently a 2-mile gap between where Rio Salado ends just west of Tempe Marketplace and then where Vachelet will begin by Riverview. So we're talking with the city of Tempe, looking to see if there might be an opportunity to partner together to do some kind of pedestrian path, a trail in that area that would help bridge those two projects. So we would have continuous trail access really from the West Valley, from the Gila, where Trace Rios project in the West Valley, through Rio Salado, through the Phoenix Salt River projects, and then through Tempe up to Mesa. On the Department of Transportation, obviously a lot going on right now. Federal Aviation Administration, we're working with them on the FAA reauthorization bill. We'd hoped that would have already been signed by Congress. It hasn't yet, so we're going to continue to monitor that and weigh in where appropriate. We're beginning discussions on the surface transportation reauthorization. Safety Lou, as the current authorization is known, and will be expiring next year, and discussions will begin this year on projects and funding under the new Surface Transportation Act. Federal Highways Administration, we continue our discussions with them regarding the Gateway Freeway and the environmental assessment that's currently ongoing. And then, of course, our discussions with FTA. In fact, I know Mike James was just leaving to go downtown for a meeting, downtown Phoenix, with a meeting with FTA representatives to talk about both light rail operations that are about to begin, and then also our studies on the potential downtown extension of light rail. And moving over to EPA, of course, this council's had a lot of concern and has asked us to closely monitor any water and air quality rulemaking and or legislation that EPA may be bringing forward because of the potential fiscal impacts on the city. Energy efficiency standards are something that's really being discussed hot and heavy in Congress right now, and certainly our concern is the impact that will have on our utility systems and operations, so we continue to monitor that. And then also, per some of the discussions with the council as of late, I know in particular Councilmember Jones had wanted us to monitor what the subprime lending reform acts in Congress will mean for our neighborhoods and how that could impact what's happening in some of our vacancies that we see in our neighborhoods right now.
Scott, on just looking at that last one, thinking, is there any room for discussion on non-chartered financial institutions, or is that really a state-level issue?
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, I think right now that's mainly being handled on the state level. There's a lot of legislation moving through. In fact, we'll be providing in your packets, I believe, tomorrow a state legislative update, and we've had some discussions with the mayor and vice mayor about legislation that's moving through. Everything that would delay the sunset for payday loan institutions to outright doing away with any kind of sunset on the institutions to others, that would just allow it to sunset in 2010 as it's scheduled to right now. So you have a wide variety of views in the state legislature about that.
Has there been any whisper at all at the federal level about, because of the subprime mortgage issue, about tying in those non-chartered, or is that being relegated to the state?
Mayor and Councilmember Summers, I think at this point it's mainly been relegated to the state, but we can certainly look
just
into
keep
that.
An arrow to the rail.
All right.
Thank you.
Mayor and Council, just moving on to our appropriation request, what we do obviously as a city is sit down and talk about what projects we can put forward that make sense to Congress that also don't compete against one another, that are in separate funds in different appropriations bills, so we can maximize our bang for the buck, if you will, in Congress. We have focused in on a few projects that fall through the different appropriations bills listed right now, transportation, energy and water, interior and environment, commerce bill, and labor. So we've tried to expand our reach as much as possible in order to maximize federal funding opportunities. So with that, we'll just quickly walk through. You do have included in the packet an attachment number 2 to all the material that I put out that has backup descriptions for each of these projects. And, of course, we do have representatives here from the various departments as well if you have any specific questions. But we'll go through these. If you have any questions, please let me know, and we'll try to address those. On the transportation side, aviation in particular, Phoenix Mesa Gateway Taxiway, this is phase 3 of the project. We're requesting $10.5 million.
Scott, I just noticed on the Gateway parking lot, are we charging yet, or is Gateway Airport charging yet? I don't believe they are. We've had that discussion already, and I think we're going to be asking for some money. We should probably be charging a parking fee.
Yep, Mayor, Councilmember Summers, we're actually going to bring that to our Board of Directors next month for consideration. We approved in our capital program the equipment to control, to put the access control devices and to be able to charge. And we're actually going to propose that we have a fee and start that manually probably within the next 60 days, and then it'll take us through the summer to get the equipment installed.
And we use those fees as well to help build additional parking.
Correct.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Thank you.
And Mayor, to that point, that's $1.5 million for parking lot rehabilitation that most directly would service the commercial terminal. So that's one request. And then the last request is the aircraft parking apron. This is actually, we're hoping, a joint project between multiple federal agencies that currently operate out of Phoenix Mesa Gateway. The Forest Service has now an extensive operation for wildfire season where they operate out of the airport, and also U.S. Marshals and Immigration Services. So we're hoping to combine all of those resources into one area and receive federal funding to help for aircraft parking for those jets that are used by the federal government. Energy and water, of course, we continue with our appropriations request on the Vachelet-Octmel project, and actually the $1.7 million that you see requested this year represents the last portion of the design funds that we will need to complete design on the project. So we're hopeful. The Army has notified the administration that they can utilize all of these funds this year to finish the design. We've begun design meetings at the local level with the Salt River Pima Maricopa community and also the Army Corps, so those continue on today. Of course, Vachalayot Canal was approved in the WRDA Water Resources Development Act, so authorization is there for the construction phase. So what we're looking at after design's complete is continuing to work and discuss construction phase negotiations with the Salt River Pima community and with the Army Corps to see if we can reach an agreement on construction.
But what's the local match, if any, on this?
The local match is, let me find that, Mayor. I believe it's a 2.5% match. See if I have that.
Is that split between the tribe and us? Or
no, it's actually a 5% local match, and our share would be 2.5%, I believe. I can get you those exact numbers, but okay. That's typically the way through the design phase where we've agreed to do 50-50 local share splits with the tribe. Of course, that isn't envisioned to continue during the construction phase, but would for this portion.
That's going to take a lot of briefing with the new council to continue that project, so just
absolutely
have that as one of your briefing sessions for the city manager at some point.
Right.
All right.
Hopefully you'll have some free time, Mayor. No one knows this better than you.
Yeah. Worked on it for 8 years, yeah. And we're still not constructing the darn thing.
We're getting close. The next project also is something that staff has been working on, and Catherine Sorensen's here to address any questions you may have, and that's the East Valley Water Forum. The forum to this point has been operating as a public-private partnership between public water agencies, private water companies, SRP, and others, really with the intent on focusing on the basin that sits underneath the East Valley, as opposed to the greater basin underneath the entire Phoenix metropolitan area, our sub-basin. So we've really tried to use the water forum to get information, to utilize information dealing with that. It has been operating with a state grant, and that grant will be going away soon, and so we want to utilize opportunities to receive federal funding for this really important project. And if you have any...
Yeah, can that be expanded out for larger geographic areas, to maybe even the state of Arizona look at it? Because there's so many issues with the rural and, you know, areas that don't have it. It's just such a magnificent tool that
sure.
I would think it would have more appeal to the state.
Yeah, Mayor, absolutely it could be. It's not, the East Valley Water Forum is not a formal organization. It's an informal organization that MESA basically administers via grant funds from the state. So certainly it could be opened up to be a more regional, statewide effort. However, there are some similar efforts on the west side already that are done through other similar organizations. One of them is called West Caps. Certainly it's because it is informal, membership could be opened up as broadly as we desire.
The one that really should probably be doing that would be CAGR. I mean, if they're doing replenishment, you'd think they would want to know that they should replenish in an area that they're depleting from and study the impacts.
Yeah, Mayor, absolutely. And we regularly invite CAGR staff to come and participate in our meetings. They have from time to time. It's really their discretion whether to participate.
Okay, and what is the deliverable? When this is pushed, what's the positive impact of the $150,000 for planning for the city, or what do we get as a result of expending this money?
Really, down the road, what we're looking towards is setting up the necessary institutions and processes to put together the possibility of a surface water treatment plant far to the east of Mesa to hopefully move away from dependence on groundwater to our east. which then protects our groundwater levels here in Mesa as well. So the work will be done by the Bureau of Reclamation, and it will move us hopefully closer towards surface water use in the far eastern portion of the basin rather than groundwater use.
Does it take into account all of the Superstition Vistas area? Does it go
absolutely
that far?
In fact, that's probably, you know, that's the main focal point, because that's where we expect the most growth to occur.
Do we have buy-in from the state trust land then on this program too?
They, you know, yes, they do, and the state land department participates very regularly in our forum and discussions.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Mayor and Council, moving on from the Interior and Environment Appropriation Bill, Mesa Grande, of course, as you all know, we did receive some Indian gaming grants this past year that will allow us to begin the process of some of the stabilization and other projects that we have planned for phase one of the Mesa Grande ruins. Now we're seeing an opportunity to also potentially leverage some federal funding for that project. Tom Wilson's here in case we have any specific questions about how this money would be utilized, but this would be for the phase one continuation that council has seen many times. So
I guess my question on that is, if we do something there and we build a structure and we start having people come through, is it going to be cost neutral, or is it going to be another budget impact for us to have to staff and maintain, or will the revenues be sufficient to...
Mr. Mayor, members of council, for this first phase, what we would like to do is have the Mesa Grande ruins open to the public based on volunteer labor. There will be no budgetary impact to the city.
All right, good.
And Mayor, while Tom's here, I think we should also stress that because of some of the federal discussions that we're having, we're looking at maximizing all types of federal opportunities, partnerships with National Park Service or other things that could help the city and leverage our local commitment to the project.
Is there any harm to keeping that thing as a dirt pile until we get adequate funding to actually uncover it and build? Is there degradation to the area, or we are
there, Mr. Mayor and members of council? There is degradation, and part of phase one is to deal with some of that based on the preservation plan that we already have.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Yeah. Mayor, the next project is from the police department for the East Valley Rapid Crime Analysis. This is a priority of the East Valley Police Chiefs Association, and this would allow greater communication on crime analysis between the different jurisdictions and agencies. I know Cheryl Butler's here from the police department if we have any specific questions, but this continues the effort by the police department to be a regional leader and share these resources. Okay. And Mayor, also from PD, another joint project that we're hoping to do with Mesa Public Schools, I believe. This is the Positive Alternatives for Youth. It's a follow-up to the Mesa program that referenced earlier that did receive funding last year. We've retooled the program somewhat and would like to bring it forward with the same intent of reaching at-risk youth and utilizing some federal funds to address some of the public safety concerns and of young people who are at risk.
But it's, the request would be for a standalone program. We fund it with this money. The money stops. We stop doing the program. There's not a continuation of a commitment for multiple years if we get 1 year of funding.
I believe, and hopefully I'll be corrected here if I'm wrong, but I know Chief Gascon has really made a point, I believe, in the past of saying that we'll operate this as funds are available. And
I want to just make sure that policy has been conveyed.
That is correct, Mayor, and we are going to run it year to year in conjunction with A New Leaf and Mesa Public Schools, and we have their commitment.
All right, so and you understand my comment.
I do.
Okay, go ahead then.
Thanks. Right. Mayor, just the next slide represents even though we don't bring these transit projects forward as necessarily the city of Mesa, we bring it forward as a region. I did want to put this on your radar screen because these are issues that we'll be talking to Congress about. As you see, we pulled out of the regional request the projects that have implications on Mesa, different corridor studies for our potential downtown extension of light rail is recipient of federal funding, and also a lot of the expansion of bus routes as well. So we'll continue to talk to Congress about this, even though really RPTA and Valley and Metro Rail take the lead on requesting funding for this.
What area are you looking at Country Club and US 60?
Yeah. Mayor, well, I know Mike had to leave, so I told him I'm sure there'd be a transit question that came up. I'm not sure if they have a parcel identified yet. I believe that has been that was adopted in the RTP as a potential park and ride location. I don't know if there's an exact lot purchased.
It's just a thing.
Dan said they're still reviewing right now a variety of sites, but we don't have a particular site.
Might purchased. Be down by the county there where that retention basin is or something. All right. Okay.
Right. Mayor, the only project that we did not include that we're still working on is a potential surface a streets project. We're working right now with transportation to try to find one that meets the criteria that Congress has been funding street projects at. We weren't prepared to bring that forward today, but we're going to continue to work on that and see if we can get some federal funds into our local streets. So with that, Mayor, I'll be glad to entertain any questions or comments over the specific request or anything federally as well.
Okay, and I think we head out of town, what, Tuesday?
We do.
In the last group. Mm-hmm. Any questions on the federal program? Okay.
Thank you.
Clear presentation, discuss and provide direction on a temporary traffic control program. I have to go ahead and excuse the Vice Mayor.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm Dan Clevenger from the Transportation Department. With me is Alan Sanderson, our city traffic engineer and acting deputy transportation director over traffic engineering. We brought a traffic control or temporary traffic control program concept to the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee in December. And the version or options we'll describe today have considerably more detail. And we'll try to be brief on this. I just want to make it clear that when we say temporary traffic control, we're talking about traffic barricading in work zones in the street, sidewalks, and right-of-way. All of the major cities in the valley have some version of a temporary traffic control program, as do most large cities in the country. What Alan's going to do in his presentation is describe the benefits of such a program and three possible methods to implement a program like that in Mesa. So, Alan?
Thank you, Dan, Mayor, and Council. As Dan mentioned, we presented this to the TIC in December, and the members of the TIC were favorable to the idea. They suggested that we look at a method to implement a traffic control program that would relate a fee to the level of restriction that a contractor or special event organizer might have. So this is, as Dan mentioned, a revised presentation with three different fee scenarios, and we're really looking for direction this morning on if and how we want to proceed on developing a formal program. Just briefly, temporary traffic control arises from construction, maintenance activities, special events, or emergencies, and the purpose of the program is to really minimize delays and impact to the public and improve safety in barricading zones for everybody, drivers, pedestrians, and workers. The key point is we want contractors to plan ahead more than today or tomorrow or 3 days down the road. And we want transportation to approve each lane restriction so that we have an opportunity to coordinate, to work with the contractors, make sure they're actually minimizing the impact to the public. Under this kind of program, we know who is in the street, where, A lot of times we'll get a complaint and we don't know who's doing the work. We don't know if it's a permit, a contractor working under permit, city utility, a private utility. We have to make multiple phone calls to figure out who whose job it is. So this program would let us coordinate work between contractors if more than one entity wanted to be in the same place at the same time, and give us an opportunity to make sure they're not doing restrictions that are more than what's really needed. Some of the things we run into: lane restrictions that aren't taken down in time for the peak hours, sidewalks where safe, clear paths for pedestrians aren't maintained, lane closures without proper warning and barricading, barricades left out of the street but blocking the sidewalk. If you're in a wheelchair, you couldn't get through here, or signs left up but no work going on. Right now, how streets get restricted in Mesa: a contractor gets a right-of-way permit from building safety, or someone may be having a special event, have a license from tax and licensing. City crew may be out there doing some work. But basically, after a contractor gets a right-of-way permit, we pretty much hope he follows the rules in the barricade manual, which is a condition of the permit, but there's really no formal method to know whether what they want to do, when or where, or make sure they're doing it properly.
Yes, Darrell.
Pretty much your line of defense now is your city inspectors, is that right? I mean, if they're under a permit, the city inspector might say you're not doing what you're supposed to do when he inspects it.
No, Mayor Hawker and Councilmember Truitt, that's correct. If anyone, either the engineering inspector or anyone else in the city may see something that looks odd and give us a call, and we have to go out and investigate, see who it is, and work on the situation. And as we mentioned, we don't have one process that coordinates everything, so we can't really identify and resolve conflicts ahead of time, know who's in the street so we can hold them accountable, and we get some improper barricading out there at times. And this can go as far as not only just inconvenience, you can have actually potential hazards to the public. And even if everything's set up properly but they've restricted more than they really have to, they're going to create more congestion, which in and of itself is a potential safety as well as efficiency problem. So this program would provide the accountability, contract resolution, and improve the conditions on our streets and sidewalks as far as barricading. We want to prevent things like this by identifying the needs ahead of time and coordinating the work with the contractors so they just don't pop out there one morning and nobody knew they were coming. I'm not going to go through all these numbers, but basically we have one barricade coordinator now that is partially funded by a fee collected on plans for boring and street cut work. We have two budgeted vacant traffic studies analyst positions in transportation, and we're proposing to convert those to an engineering technician too, to help administer the nuts and bolts of this tracking contractors, and a second barricade coordinator. So compared to what our current budget is, wouldn't be an increase in FTEs, wouldn't be an increase in the budgeted cost. There would be an increase in actual expenditure because those two positions are vacant right now. And all of these costs, I should say, include city-applied overhead. They're not just the direct personnel cost. It includes the overhead.
Okay.
How easily trained would one of these people be, and could it be one of these building department full-time employees that we're having to look at right now?
Mayor Hawker and Councilmember Truitt, we've had that discussion, and I think that's certainly a potential. I think it's a very good potential. So again, the total cost, including city applied overheads, estimated at about $350,000 a year. We've just, based on our experience, about 70% of that historically has been due to permit work. About 30% is due to city departments, capital improvement programs, special events, that sort of thing. And there's about $40,000 in one-time startup costs.
Scott?
Is there a fine for blocking the lane without having a permit? Or would there be if something implemented if we were to put this together?
Mayor Hocker and Councilmember Summers, there is not currently, other than you're violating, if you don't have a right-of-way permit, you're not supposed to be in the right-of-way. But part of what we would develop with this would be a schedule of sanctions if people just don't cooperate and do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, because otherwise you have an economic incentive to just not get the fee permit. Without the fee, you have to have the the stick.
Potentially.
Okay.
But you could say that's an incentive now. With working in the right-of-way. You know, you find people connecting to sewer systems every once in a while or building buildings without permits. But if we had such a system where we knew who was legitimate in there, somebody drives by and sees something there, it would be very easy to check to see if they've got a valid permit or not. The current fee has been generating about $40,000 to $60,000 a year, and obviously that varies with the level of activity. As discussed in the earlier presentations this morning. So after talking to the TIC committee, we came up with three alternative fee structures. One is very similar to what we do now with a per sheet fee, and then another one that's a, I'm calling a project time fee, and then a lane rental fee. The per sheet fee is basically already in place. We would just have to refine which sheets, which we're talking about sheets in a plan set. Someone comes to building safety to get a permit, we've got the plans for the work. We'd have to adjust to make sure everyone was clear on which sheets the fee would be assessed against, and then set the fee. Disadvantage to this, it really doesn't provide an monetary incentive to minimize restrictions in the street, and obviously the revenue is going to vary with the level of construction activity, and as the previous discussions this morning attest, it's really an estimate, so there's no guarantee on what you're really going to get. The project time fee, the example is, I'm a contractor, I come in for a permit, I'll have to tell you if I'm going to have traffic restrictions that are, I won't have traffic restrictions, or I'm going to have 3 days worth, I'm going to have 14 days worth, 60 days worth, something like that, and then the fee is collected at that time based on the duration of the restriction that the contractor anticipates. And then if he isn't able to complete the work within that time, would have to go back and renew the permit and again pay the fee based on the length of time that he expects to continue to be out there. This would also be pretty easy to implement at the time permits are issued, similar to the existing per sheet fee. And again, it's difficult to predict because we don't know the future construction activity. Not only that, we don't have any historical data to know how long for any given permit contractors actually restricted the streets. And then the lane rental fee, which is the purest method of tying a monetary incentive to the amount of inconvenience you create, it'd be something like a dollar amount per lane per day. And you can vary that depending on if you want to encourage people to work at night. You can lower the cost to rent the lanes at night versus during the day. And you can really develop a good incentive to minimize the restrictions by a lane rental type fee. This is a lot more difficult to implement and administer because it's a lot more moving parts, if you will. And we wouldn't really be able to implement that in an incremental fashion. We'd really have to staff that fully to start collecting the fees. Where on the other options, you could actually start or continue collecting the fees, and then you can add the personnel incrementally if you wanted to, based on what your revenue actually turns out to be. And again, we have no detailed historical data on length and duration of fee or street or sidewalk restrictions. So our recommendation is we'd like to proceed and would recommend the project time fee basis because it's relatively easy to implement. It provides some incentive to minimize the duration of restrictions. You can implement it in a stepwise fashion. You don't have to fully staff the program before you start collecting the fees. And we'll start collecting the detailed data on the type of traffic restrictions contractors are using, which would help give us a basis going forward if we ever did want to change to a lane rental concept. I might mention that Glendale is using the lane rental concept. It was basically directed by their council, who apparently were tired of running into a lot of restrictions. Goodyear uses the project time fee basis. Phoenix basically funds their program by fines when people are caught doing something wrong, which we don't want to, we don't recommend that approach. Tucson is more the approach we're also looking at, where we want to get to people ahead of time, get voluntary cooperation, but we would have a sanction and a fee schedule for the folks who just don't get the message and don't want to cooperate. So with that, I know that was kind of quick, but we've been here a long time, so if there are any questions or if you want to, we're open to any input you may have.
Okay. I kind of concur with the staff recommendation. Let's move forward and do it. I also appreciate that there's a copy of the little form in there so you can see what's would be entailed. It makes sense to me to know who's in the streets when and how they're barricading them. So I think it should work. I think the lane rental fee would be something I'd certainly like to move to, but I don't think I want to start there. But I think that is the best concept, so that you really have some cooperation. I do have one question, whether if you're doing like a large overlay project or a fog seal project where you've got a gazillion streets over a month that are going to be blocked, do you do, you know, one permit or multiple permits? Do you do your map with all the days on it, or how do you do something like that, and who pays for it? Is it part of your contract bid documents, or is the city assuming that they're going to waive that? Have you thought that through?
Mayor Hawker, council members, with city capital work or city contracted maintenance work, we would anticipate not assessing that fee but controlling that through the project specifications. They would still have to get a a permit to do whatever restrictions they need, but we didn't, in talking with the other cities and our engineering construction folks, we didn't think it made sense because we'd be charging ourselves a fee. So we have some different ways to control
that. And the detail work and the flexibility that you need to do a project like that would be. Okay, good. Any other questions on this? All right. I think you've got direction, then. Let's move forward.
Thank you very much.
All right. Let's see. Number of acknowledging receipt of various boards and committees. We have two. Motion and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes. The reports on meetings and our conferences attended. I had one last night that passed out a visual that I want to share with the group. And let's send one on down there like that. That's what we do with this. This is a map that reflects. Can you operate Elmo for me and put this one up? Oh, we've lost him, huh? Oh, okay. This is a map, I'll just kind of show it here, that shows the existing roadway capacity. And it also shows in 2050 what the roadway capacity is and what the volume of traffic on those roadways will be. And as you can see, the huge amount of red in 2050 is if we do nothing, all of those areas in red will be overly stressed and congested. So as we go forward with this plan to look out 50 years for Arizona and eliminate congestion, you can see where the areas need the most attention. I thought this was almost comparable to the red dots where you could see the growth. This now shows the traffic impact of that growth in the different areas with the different freeways and interstate systems. So that was the Transportation Policy Committee meeting, which I chaired last night. There was also some discussion that was interesting as far as who puts this plan together. You know, Maricopa County, there's five different counties that are going to be, or five different sub-regions that come together, and how do you do a transportation plan? How do you submit criteria? And, of course, the big question is how is it paid for? But this, I thought, was one of the better summaries of the challenges that Arizona is going to have in the next 50 years. So, and Kyle, I think you had the light rail meeting.
Yesterday, I was at the Metro Board Rail meeting, and it was interesting, to say the least. And then a number of us were at the Man and Woman of the Year on Monday evening, recognizing people who do an outstanding job of serving our community.
Okay, any other reports on meetings? Okay, let's go on to scheduling of meetings and general information. Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a reminder, there's a Transportation Infrastructure Committee meeting. I think they have an item to review after this meeting.
That's a lot.
You're welcome. Just a reminder, this Saturday, February 23rd, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., we'll be having, the library will be having their celebration of over 100 years or a century of service. So we encourage anyone to come out between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. at the main library. And reminder to the council, we've canceled the February 28th study session. So our next council meeting will be, and study session will be Monday, March 3rd. Thank you.
Okay. All right. I have no requests to speak this morning.
No requests, ma'am.
All right. Have a motion. Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. We are adjourned.